What do workers gain from their toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. Colossians 3. Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything, and do it not only when their eye is on you and to curry their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving.
For the past few weeks, we've been watching old episodes of The Office around our house. And what better show to be watching when you're preparing a message on workplace tension? And so a week or two ago, we watched the episode, which is one of my favorite scenes. There are so many favorites, but this is one of my favorites. So we're just going to take a look at a brief clip introducing you to Michael Scott and his reflections on the significance of the workplace.
Nobody should have to go to work thinking, oh, this is the place that I might die today. That's what a hospital is for. An office is for not dying. An office is a place to live life to the fullest, to the max, to... An office is a place where dreams come true.
There you have it. An office is a place where dreams come true. Okay, Michael Scott may be pushing it just a little, but our work and our place of work does tend to affect the satisfaction that we experience in life. It does. And so this passage from Ecclesiastes, which basically means the book of the sayings of the teacher, says that I know that there's nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat, drink, and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. But what do we do when we can't find satisfying work? Or when the place we're in does more to take away from our humanity than to enhance it? How you hear this morning is going to depend on your context, because everyone here is in a slightly different context. You may be working full-time, you may be working part-time, you may be in school, you may be staying at home, you may be retired, you may be looking for a job. There may be so many different situations that you're in. So you're going to have to kind of translate this morning through whatever your specific circumstance is this morning. And I just want to acknowledge the diversity of those circumstances here. This month we're talking about the February blahs. So let's dive in and explore what we can do when our workplace, whether that's the home, an office, or a classroom, is more about tension and trouble than it is about satisfaction. In the 1950s, Frederick Herzberg developed a model of motivational theory around the workplace. We have this diagram up here for you, and he talked about two different factors that contribute to our experience of satisfaction in the workplace. There are demotivators and motivators. So the demotivators are the things that, you know, these are the negative things that can get make us feeling down. So some of the examples would be policies, so burdensome policies, the quality of leadership, pay, relationships, work conditions, status, and security. If these things have a negative tint to them, then our experience at work is going to be negative. There are also these motivators, these positive factors, advancement, the actual work itself, our responsibility, achievement, growth, and recognition. And he talked about that in whatever setting that we're in, being able to remove the demotivating factors is the first thing that needs to happen in order for us to be able to actually step into these motivating factors. So as you're sitting here this morning, and you think about that workplace, again, classroom, office, you know, construction site, home, it doesn't matter. As you think about what you do kind of for that chunk of your life, maybe you take a look at this and say, oh, I've got a few demotivating factors that I could point out pretty clearly. Or maybe you look at some of those motivators and say, these are the things that I really want in my occupation, but I'm not finding it. It's unlikely that anyone here has a perfectly motivating job. Probably no one here could say, I experience none of the bottom of those and all of the top. Probably no one could do that. But most of us probably have a sense that things could be a bit better than they are right now. Maybe it's an annoying coworker that you can't get away from. Maybe it's a professor who can't seem to grasp the fact that you have three other classes besides hers. Or maybe it's a friend who claims that her toddlers don't drive her crazy all day long. There are so many different things that can cause us to be dissatisfied, and the varieties of our dissatisfaction are legion. They're as numerous as we are. Now, I have to acknowledge that this is a bit of a tricky theme for me. For the past 18 years, my experience of the workplace has been our church, and so the number of appropriate illustrations I can share are limited. For example, were I to talk about a certain ornery coworker of mine, that could cause problems, right? So I won't. Or how about those challenging days when I want to throw in the towel and move on, like everyone else does? Well, I can't quite talk about those days either. But where does all of the dissatisfaction and struggle come from? If we all experience it to a degree, where does it come from? And why does it seem so difficult to find ourselves in ideal working conditions? Well, I want to go back to the beginning, because I think the first hints of this might be found for us in the book of Genesis, the book of the beginnings. And in Genesis chapter 3, verses 17 to 19, we run into a conversation that happens between God and Adam shortly after what's known as the fall. So Adam and Eve decide to turn their backs on God, try their own hand at living life to the full, and this is the response from God. To Adam, he said, because you listened to your wife and ate from the tree about which I commanded you, you must not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you will eat of it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow, you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken. So we have this act of disobedience leads to God saying, the work that you do is now going to be difficult. It is going to be hard. You're going to be sweating, and it's going to be a challenge for you. Well, a generation later, God has a run-in with Adam and Eve's son, Cain. And Cain obviously arranges, he murders his brother, and then God confronts him. And we see another similar, even slightly more extreme curse in chapter 4, verses 10 to 12. The Lord said, what have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Now you are under a curse and driven from the ground, which opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it will no longer yield its crops for you. You will be a restless wanderer on the earth. And so here we have this curse again. Now for Adam, it was, when you work, it's going to be hard work and you're going to have to struggle against these thorns and thistles. Well, for Cain, it's like, when you work, nothing good is going to come out of this, and you're just going to have to wander. You're not even going to experience the employment that you previously had. So we have these curses which give us a sense of, oh, maybe that's why work is so hard. It's because of those people. Dang it. Why did they have to do that? But the thing that can be difficult for us to remember is that before there was any of this cursing, there was still work to be done. It's not like the curse was, from now on, instead of sitting back and drinking lemonade in the sun, you're going to work. The curse was, from now on, the work that you're doing is going to be more difficult. Because the chapter earlier in Genesis 2:15, we read, the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it. And so part of the narrative of human history is that work is actually a gift of God. Work is something that was given while things were still in the state of the way God had intended it to be between God and humanity. And this falls in line with what the passage from Ecclesiastes reminds us, that work, even hard work or toil, as the teacher says, is a gift from God. Now, if I can't use too many illustrations from my job here, I can certainly use it from previous jobs. And one of the last jobs that I had prior to becoming a pastor was working construction for Fry Brothers out of Hawksville. And I made three mistakes early on in my job there, and I'll share them with you this morning. So the first mistake I made was in the equipment that I brought to the work site. They give you a list. There's like four things you need. It was like a helmet, a work belt, a tape measure, and a hammer, or something like that. You need these things, bring them with you. That's all that they said. They didn't say what color of construction helmet I had to have. So I showed up with a white construction helmet. And the people who are laughing are people who know that that's the color of helmet that a foreman wears. And so they made fun of me and spray painted a big green dot. They said, this way anyone visiting the site will know that you're not the foreman. So I made that mistake. I also made the mistake of not wearing sunglasses. Working outside for like 10 hours in the sun hurts your eyes. I went home that night. My eyes were like watering the whole drive home. I had to turn all the lights in the house out. I couldn't see, and it was awful. The third mistake I made was buying a $4 hammer from Canadian Tire. I mean, the reason I had a job is because I had no money, so I needed to save as much as I could. And one day I was breaking ties off of these forms with the back of the hammer, and the head of the hammer just flew right off. And one of the guys who was there had been there a long time. He came up to me, he gave me his backup hammer, and he said, bring me $25 tomorrow. Anyways. So I wasn't really good at this job, and it was hard work. Long days, early mornings, hard work, but it was meaningful work. So hard work isn't a bad thing necessarily. Sometimes hard work, and sometimes work that's not comfortable and that's out of your zone, like that can actually be really significant work. I was able to, after a few weeks' time, begin to look at the things that I'd accomplished, the things that I'd built, and it was actually quite significant. But whether we spend our days in an office building, a living room, or a construction site, whether we're in school, at home raising children, or building a business, our work can be a gift. Work is not a bad thing in and of itself. And here's one of the ways in which it is a gift. Eugene Peterson says, I'm prepared to contend that the primary location for spiritual formation is the workplace. Our work is a gift, at least in a major way, because it is the place where we are shaped and formed spiritually. And if this is true, then we better find out how to navigate some of our workplace tension. Came across this little cartoon conversation between a couple of toiletries here. Sometimes I feel that I have the worst job in the world, says the toothbrush. Roll of toilet paper thinks, yeah, right. All right, so that's enough of the potty humor for now. This passage from Ecclesiastes, what do workers gain from their toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. And when we think about the burden of work, we think about the jobs that we just hate doing or the environments we can't stand being in. Well, here are a few of them. Imagine being the guy who has to clean up this mess. Like, that is not a job you want. Or the person who has to deal with this problem, climbing up this telephone pole to fix a problem in that nest of wires. Or how about the person who has to deal with this dangerous situation? Your job's holding up the target practice sign. Or, of course, there's one job that combines all of these challenges, a stay-at-home parent, right? Cleaning up messes, dealing with problems, danger in danger constantly. But I think the burden that the author of Ecclesiastes is talking about is actually something else. It's not this burden of things being hard or things being difficult, because toil, remember, the Ecclesiastes says, is a gift from God. So hard work is actually can be a gift. So what is the burden that the teacher might be talking about? Verse 11 says that God has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. I think this is the burden. The burden of our work is that we long for something meaningful in life. It's this internal understanding that we were made for something more than counting widgets or earning a paycheck. It's this thing inside of us that says, I'm supposed to be doing something significant with my life, and yet I'm here doing this, and it doesn't seem to reconcile. I think that's the burden of our employment, the burden of our workplace, is the tension that we experience with what we've been created to do. I want to read a little segment from Thomas Merton's book, No Man is an Island, in which he addresses how we should go about trying to find a job. He said, it is for each one to find out for himself the kind of work and environment in which he can best lead a spiritual life. If it is possible to find such conditions, and if he's able to take advantage of them, he should do so. But what a hopeless thing the spiritual life would be if it could only be lived under ideal conditions. Such conditions have never been within the reach of most men, and were never more inaccessible than in our modern world. Everything in modern city life is calculated to keep man from entering into himself and thinking about spiritual things. Even with the best of intentions, a spiritual man finds himself exhausted and deadened and debased by the constant noise of machines and loudspeakers, the dead air and the glaring lights of offices and shops, the everlasting suggestions of advertising and propaganda. The whole mechanism of modern life is geared for a flight from God and from the spirit into the wilderness of neurosis. Okay, not exactly encouraging words at the end there, but you get the picture. What a hopeless thing the spiritual life would be if it could only be lived under ideal conditions. Yeah, it would be wonderful to have that job where you just sit around and everything is easy and there aren't problems and you just do fulfilling, meaningful things all the time. Like, that'd be great, but probably none of us are going to have that job. So what do we do? Well, learning what our 9-to-5 has to do with our spiritual formation is so key. Any job that we do, whether or not that we see the significance of it, can be significant when we do it well and when we allow ourselves to be shaped and formed along the way. Rob Tripkin, in an article on the website for the Center for Faith and Enterprise, writes that a theology of vocation needs to project a vision that identifies the deeper meaning of what we are doing so that we can begin to see the sacred and its potential realization in our day-to-day work lives. It's important for us to understand this idea of vocation, which is a word that basically means a calling, a sense that we're doing something that's in line with who we were created to be, that we're doing something significant. And this word vocation is so much better than occupation. When you think about an occupation, you think about just sitting around. You're just occupying space, right? But we don't want to be occupied. We want to be called. We want to be doing something significant. I think this is especially important for people who are starting off on the career path to think about. For students, whether in junior or senior high school or in college or university, preparing for the rest of your life, a challenge to discern and prepare for a vocation and not just an occupation. Now, of course, there are going to be many opportunities to present yourself, and it will be tempting to just jump at the first one. Like, you're going to find an opportunity like this. Wanted, someone to grind or chew hay for horse with bad teeth. Like, you're going to see that opportunity and say, that is for me. And you're going to want it. But be patient. Be patient and consider that there may be something more significant for you out there. Now, admittedly, and this is important to acknowledge, life circumstances often require compromise. Very few of us just get to walk into something that is fulfilling and meaningful that we can walk in the rest of our days. But each one of us ought to be fighting over the long run for a 9-to-5 that is meaningful and that is life-giving. But this morning we're talking about workplace tension because meaningful work often evades us. And so rather than talking about how to live in those ideal circumstances, we're going to talk a little bit about how do we live when the situation that we're working in is less than ideal. So the second reading came from the book of Colossians, a letter that Paul wrote to an early church in the first century, and he encourages the members of this fledgling church to rethink their work in light of their faith. Verses 23 and 24. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. The challenging thing of this passage, I mean, there's a lot in it, but the challenging thing is that Paul says, whatever you do. He doesn't say, whenever you're doing something exciting or important, do it like you're doing it for the Lord. He says, whatever you do. Whatever insignificant or significant thing that you're doing, you're supposed to work as if you're working for God. Because at the end of the day, you are, he says. Now, I know it can be difficult to understand how this works at times, but we need to try. I was talking to a friend this week who said, and I'm paraphrasing, I try to show up at work every day thinking, how can I live out my faith in what I do today? I thought that's exactly what we're talking about here this morning. That is what Paul is writing about. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as if you're serving God. So whatever it is that you walk into, you walk in saying, how can I live my faith out in whatever it is that I'm doing, as far removed or as closely related as you may think it is to spirituality? Henry Nouwen wrote that the spiritual life is not something we add on to an already busy life, It is to impregnate and infiltrate and control what we already do with an attitude of service to God. So growing in faith and growing in our spirituality is not about saying, okay, I've got to carve out more time in the morning or more time at night and do some spiritual things. It's about doing the things we do every day and understanding how God is working in our lives through those things. So take a moment and think about your workplace, wherever it is that you're in right now. What would it look like for you to do what you already do with an attitude of service to God? What would that look like? How would things be different? How would your conversations be different? How would your work ethic be different? How would your outlook on what you're doing be different if you thought of this as a way of serving God? The Proverbs, another book of wisdom in the Old Testament, are filled with examples of the value of working well. I'll just throw a few of them out here. Proverbs 14 says, "All hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty." Proverbs 10 says, "He who gathers crops in summer is a wise son, but he who sleeps during harvest is a disgraceful son." Proverbs 22 says, "Do you see someone skilled in their work? They will serve before kings. They will not serve before officials of low rank." And these little couplets of wisdom appear over and over again, reminding us that doing work and doing it well can be a blessing in life. Dedication to whatever you do can bring profit and wisdom and opportunity. And I know that one of the things that we may think in reaction to this is, not in my circumstances. Well, maybe if I could only get that promotion, then I would be able to have a meaningful, then I would be able to profit and gain wisdom and have opportunity, but not where I am now. There's no chance for that here. And this is where we need to remember that these instructions in Colossians chapter 3 were written for slaves. Now, Eric and I were talking during the week about how usually when we talk about this verse, we start at verse 23, and we ignore the part about slaves because we don't want to acknowledge that part of the Bible. So we just kind of set that aside. But I actually think it's really important because we can look at our job or our career situation and say, man, like, this is a bad situation. How can I ever serve God in this situation? But when Paul said, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, he was addressing people who were slaves, who were enslaved to an owner, who had to do the bidding of their master. Slaves, he writes, obey your earthly masters in everything, and do it not only when their eye is on you and to curry their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. And so if you're in a situation and your employment is just driving you nuts and you don't think you can handle it anymore, maybe replace your job description where it says slaves there and realize that as challenging as it may be, if Paul thought it was possible for people who were enslaved to do this, then maybe he thinks it's possible for you to do it as well. You see, the work we do in the classroom, the home, or the factory is part of what makes us who we are. And since who we are matters to God, the work that we do matters, all of it. But far from only giving instruction to employees, Paul has words for employers as well. Because some of us in this room are certainly in a position where we're actually employing other people, or where we are managing or responsible for other people. And there's a unique challenge. I mean, in many ways, the idea of whatever you're doing, work at it with all your heart, applies to us. But there are unique challenges to people who are in those positions as well. Because in the very next passage, Paul goes on to say, "Masters, provide your slaves with what is right and fair, because you know that you also have a master in heaven." See, this isn't just an opportunity for the person who feels like they're at the bottom of the rung to say, okay, fine, I got to grit my teeth and bear it. There's also a challenge for people who are responsible for overseeing others to make sure that you are acting godly and reflecting the character of Christ in how you lead. So part of what it means to live out our faith in the workplace is helping reduce or remove the tension experienced by the people around us, the people who work under us, the people who work alongside us. How can the words that we speak, the actions that we do, reduce the workplace tension of others? There's a book in the New Testament of the Bible, James chapter 5:4, where this criticism is laid on people in the first century. "Look, the wages you failed to pay, the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty." And those who are in a position of employing people, those who are in a position of overseeing, we have a responsibility to remember that we're actually serving God and that the cries of the people who were maybe overseeing, they are being called out to God. And his challenge for us is to reflect him in our work. So as an employer or even as a coworker, you have the ability to contribute or to steal from the sacred significance of the work of those around you. How can everything from the most menial task to the most apparently significant task in our culture, how can they all be considered as opportunities to grow in faith? It's a reminder that as much as our 9-to-5 shapes us and who we are, it also affects the people around us. So let's try to be aware of that as we walk into our places of work. I'll close with a thought from Henry now, and before we get to some time for discussion this morning. He says, if I cannot find God in the middle of my work, where my concerns and worries, pains and joys are, it does not make sense to try to find him in the hour set free at the periphery of my life. Our workplace is the place that we spend most of our time in a day. And so we gotta find God there. We gotta find out what it means for God to be found there and how we can live it out. And so my prayer is may we set out this week to find God in the middle of our work. I'm gonna invite you to stand. I'm gonna pray as we close this portion of our service. For those who haven't been here before, the way we run on Sunday mornings is the last half hour from 10:30 to 11. We encourage you to join a discussion table in the gym. I've written some questions that pry a little deeper into these themes. It'll be an opportunity for us to get to know one another and talk about the idea of workplace tension. So God, we come to you and we want to try at least to acknowledge the gift of work, the gift of hard work. I pray for those who are struggling to find it, those who are in between jobs or are struggling to find employment. God, I pray that you would provide for them an opportunity. I pray for everyone in this room who would find themselves dealing with some kind of workplace tension, whether it's relationships, whether it's experiencing significance, whatever it is, other negative aspects of the environment. God, I pray that you would help us to both be part of the solution and to bear it and do the best that we can to do whatever it is we're doing in whatever place we find ourselves, as if we're doing it for you. So God, use us to encourage one another this morning and help us during the course of our week to maybe think just a little bit differently about how you meet us right where we are. Amen.